Welcome to the South Cars Conference number 96140. Connection established.
Welcome. Welcome to the South Cars Thursday night open forum. For October 22nd, 2009. Sorry, I think I'm into the yellow here a little bit. South Cars TNT is a directed public service open forum whose aim is to share the collective knowledge with any and all who have an insatiable curiosity for all things. We promise to entertain, promise to inform, and mostly we promise to have fun. This conference is made available by the Western Michigan privately owned repeater network. I'll start right away by explaining that my voice is a little bit raspier than normal. I've got a little bit of a throat infection. It's the joy of having kids that go to public school, and it's that time of year, so it's turned a little bit colder here lately, so I'm fighting off a bit of a bug, so you'll have to bear with me. Luckily, I don't have to do a lot of talking tonight. That's the beauty of the open forum. Your net control for this evening is the guy who's been talking. That's me, Pete, Victor Echo 2 X-ray Papa Lima, and I'm located in beautiful but cool Montreal, Canada, where the temperature tonight is 2 degrees Celsius, 34 degrees Fahrenheit under overcast, little bit mixed snow and rain sky, calling for a low of minus one tonight or 30 degrees Fahrenheit. Winter is coming fast, but so is Halloween. At this time, I would like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anyone needing to contact the station and move off the server for their queue, so come aboard now, please. Very good. Leaving a three-second pause in between transmissions as a friendly reminder to all who transmit. A couple of quick announcements. Our open forums are recorded each week, and podcasts are available on our website, www.voip.southcars.com. Look for the South Cars VoIP podcast link on the left of the page. They're all there for you to go check out the archives. As a disclaimer, like I said, normally I'd say that the opinions expressed herein are not those of South Cars necessarily, but do represent those of the commentator. But tonight's commentator, we can pretty much guarantee, represents the views and opinions of South Cars. Tonight's presenter will be Gordon, KY6V, back by popular demand for the follow-up of last week's Echolink 101. Tonight we present Echolink 201. This presentation is geared, again, for those just beginning, those interested to begin, and some reinforcement issues and shortcuts for experienced users. The presenter for this evening, like I said, Gordon, is our VOIP manager, and he brings along experience in analog and digital communications with specific exposure to Echolink. I pause for 1 second. Actually, 3 seconds. Yeah, that was more like 6 seconds, but I had to have a sip of water because my voice just might not hold up tonight. Bear with me. A few announcements. We're looking for co-producers for this show who will be responsible for every aspect of one show per month. Could be anything from an interview, book reviews, anything that you'd like to talk about. A great opportunity to get involved in a one-of-a-kind net. I think it's a blast, and I certainly would like to build a team. I think we could make this net even better and stronger. Contact us at voip@southcars.com for more details. We need your input. Send us your suggestions for topics of discussion on this open forum. Any and all topics of interest will be considered for discussion, whether they be technical or of general interest, ham radio related, computer related, gardening or photography, if you guys want to talk about that. Send us your input to the same address, voip@southcars.com. And finally, if you have a skill or topic of interest you want to share with us, we invite you to be a host for one of the open forums. Again, voip@southcars.com. All ideas and suggestions for upgrades are also accepted. So without further ado, and before I time out, I will present to you Mr. Gordon, KY6V, who's coming aboard tonight with Echolink 201. Welcome aboard, Gordon. We're glad to have you back.
What a nice turnover. Thank you very much, Pete. You know, before we get into the presentation, KY6V here, these bugs that you pick up from school will last for years and years, my friend. My youngest is a junior in college at this point, and every time I go over to the campus and come back, I start sneezing and sniffling and hacking, and there goes the show. But anyway, thank you, Pete. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the continuation of our South Cars EchoLink series. This evening will be links, repeaters, firewall, and routers, and they will be discussed as to the meaning, installation, and some of the do's and don'ts involved. The presentation will be about 15 to 20 minutes in length with questions and answer period to follow. We're going to start with lesson repeaters, but before we start, let's talk about why some of us are motivated to install a linking system. A good friend of mine likes to float around in a swimming pool on a rubber raft, use his handbell, walk through his link station, and communicate with people all over the world. That's sort of neat. Another good friend likes to ride his bicycle, talk on his handheld back to his link and to the world. A lot of people, including myself, like the comfort of sticking our handheld in either our shirt pocket or our back pocket and have it available to us no matter where we are in the house or somewhere in the neighborhood. Many say, why sit in front of a computer when you can do all of this through a handheld or a mobile unit? So, with those thoughts in mind, let's get down to the basics. I'm going to start with a clean TOT timer. Stand by, please. All right, we're going to start off with a question. What is the definition or convention for the term link or repeater? Link is commonly referred in EchoLink terminology to mean a simplex operation that marries a radio and a computer together. A repeater under the EchoLink terminology is considered a two-frequency device where a station uses one frequency to transmit and the other is used for transmitting the station to others in the local area, and in this case is further connected to a computer and on into the EchoLink world. So we start out by saying what is needed to combine a radio transceiver or a repeater to a computer. And it's really quite simple when you start to think about it. It's audio in and out of both the computer and the radio equipment plus a push-to-talk line. An audio cable is needed from the speaker jack of the receiver to the line in of the computer sound card. A second audio cable is needed from the computer sound card output speaker to, that's the output speaker jack, to the microphone input pins of the transmitter. The push-to-talk circuit becomes a little more involved. Basically, you need to be able to ground your radio equipment push-to-talk line when the EchoLink program signals the need for the incoming internet audio. The EchoLink program furnishes options that are accessible at the computer COM port. You have a number of choices within those options, such as the RTS, ready to send pin, or the DTR, data terminal ready pin, and so on and so forth. This option still requires an interface device. Now, I'm going to say this again. This option still requires an interface device that will take your transfer push-to-talk line to ground on command. Let me hit a reset here for a second.
Gordon, V2XPL here. We are noticing a little bit of breakup on your signal, and it is affecting the message that you're sending across, so I'm not sure if there's something that you're doing different tonight. Normally there's absolutely no breakup. I'd say it's probably dropping 20% of your transmission. Over.
Really? I wasn't watching the bar graph. It seems to be normal here. Let me just ask a question. Is anybody else on frequency or on channel experiencing the same thing that Pete mentioned, please? Over.
NW2P, affirmative.
VUN.
All right. I have a affirmative out of the two station. And was that an affirmative out of you also, James? Over.
Yes, it was.
All right. Do I appear to be stable at this point, James? I'll try and keep one eye on the bar graph, but it's sort of hard to do. Over.
The last couple transmissions have been stable. Your first couple there were a little rough.
Okay. Let's see what happens here. I can go to a second computer if we're having difficulties on this end. Pete, I'll watch the text box as much as I can, too. Give me a heads up if you see it occurring again. All right, we're going to go on by saying that, and we were talking about interfaces and how to control your push-to-talk line on your Echolink program and your transceiver or repeater. One can build a simple transistor interface, most likely out of parts from your junk box. I'm told by Paul, N4FTD, that in the near future he will have available for the website, either his or our Southcars site, pictures and a schematic for doing it yourself. If not, many manufacturers sell interface devices ranging from under $100 to close to about $400. These manufactured interfaces can be ordered to specifically connect to the radio that you will be using and further connect directly to either your computer COM port or USB input. I'm not seeing any flags in the boxes, so I guess I'm not breaking up at this point. After the cabling is done, where do I go from here? That's the next question, obviously, in your Echolink program. It must be set up for sysop mode as opposed to the single user mode. If not already done, you will need to register to Echolink using a dash L or a dash R call sign appendage. You will need to review the new setup pages now available in sysop mode. The majority of the default settings, I might add, are quite usable. You must review your conference availability limits. Remember that it takes 17 kilobits per second of bandwidth for each station you are conferencing. If you run the math on this, this will tell you how far you can go before you start losing packets. Let me reset the timer, please. Okay. You must adjust your incoming and outgoing audio level for what is needed. And this is sort of critical, and most of us had problems with this when we first got started. This can be performed quite easily, however, if you pay attention to the incoming and outgoing levels on your resident audio Echolink bar graph. And obviously monitoring the output of your transmitter device at the same time. And again, this is all assuming that you have a satisfactory radio and antenna in place for what you're about to do. Okay, I'm going to break here for a second, reset all the timeout timers, and then we're going to roll right into firewalls and routers setup. Thank you. This is KY6B, and this is the Southcars Open Forum. In the category of firewall router setup, Echolink requires that three communication ports are open for inbound and outbound traffic. These are 5198 UDP, 5199 UDP, and 5200 TCP. This requires the user to open these ports on all associated equipment between your computer and your outside public IP address. This includes any firewall programs you have on your computer, the router firewall, or if you're using a router and a cable modem, in some cases will be affected as well. So the first question here is, what should I do first? And the first thing that we're recommending is run a firewall test. Doesn't cost anything, and it's easy. The Echolink program provides this firewall and router test under the Tools tab. It is quick and easy to run. You must not be connected to anyone when you run the test. And the program will either tell you that you passed the test or tell you what problems you may have. Now, the second step in the procedure, if you passed, smile. By all means, smile. If not, and using a router, bypass your router, connect your computer directly to your modem, and run the test again. If the test now passes, you have a problem in your router. You've identified that you didn't pass the first time, you passed the second time, the only thing different was your router was out of the way. So if the test fails, you have a problem with your computer or, in some cases, your modem. Let me buy a nickel. So we are suggesting here that the first thing to do is turn off your firewall programs on your computer and run the firewall test again. This is assuming that you've connected now directly to the modem. Now, you want to remember that Microsoft Windows comes with its own built-in firewall. And you may be running another firewall system such as Norton, McAfee, Zone Alarm, AVG, or something else. In most cases, by turning off these computer firewalls for the test, your system will pass the test. If it does not, you are most likely using a DSL system or a modem or of a commercial-grade multi-IP supplied modem type. And in both cases, it will be necessary to open these ports in the modem or bypass the modem firewall and depend on your router or computer firewalls to protect your system. So now we move on and ask the question, how do I set up my router? Let me buy another nickel. I'm doing this a little more frequently than I did last week because it came up and bit me and I had to go back and start halfway where I had left off. How do we set up my router? There are too many router types to cover each in detail. They all, however, have some commonality that can get us started. So what do I need to do to get started? And the first thing you need to do is to identify your internal IP address and the address of the router. I'll repeat that. Identify your internal IP address and that of the router. The internal IP address is that which is used to communicate from your computer to your router. This is normally, but not always, a number similar to 192.168.1.something. Now that something could be .100, .101, .102, etc. This is the internal address assigned by your router, DHCP circuit, to communicate with your computer. I'm trying to keep an eye on the text box, Pete, but you're being quiet, so thank you. The router address, the address assigned to the router itself, is normally something like 192.168.1.1. Or it could be 192.168.1.0. Both the internal computer IP number and the specific router IP address will be needed when you get into setting up the router. So please take a particular note of this. You will need both of those addresses to do the job. The easiest way to find the addresses is to right-click your local area connection status icon, which is located in the lower right side of your Windows screen. Select status, and there you will find both addresses required. Let me buy another nickel. This is KY6V in South Cars, and this is the South Cars open forum for Thursday evening. Friday, for those of you who are on the other side of the Mason-Dixon line. The next thing is accessing the router. Now, please pay attention to this if you haven't done it before. It's not very tricky, but if you know the steps, you're home free. Open your internet browser, and I don't care if you're using IE7 or Firefox or something else, but open up your internet browser. Insert in the address field the address of the router. That's the number that you picked up earlier. Activate the enter key on your keyboard and a security window should appear. Default passwords vary from router type to router type, but in the common routers, the username should remain blank and the password should be admin, A-D-M-I-N. If this is not the case, consult your router manual. Now, once into the router, look for a page that's called port forwarding. I say again, port forwarding. This, in many cases, is found under the administration and gaming tab. Allow me to buy another nickel. I hope my nickels are going to be refunded here, Pete. KY6V for South Cars. On the port forwarding window, enter the following information on an open line. The first column should be Echolink. The next column, which is your start port number, should be 5198. The next column should be your stop port number, which in this case would be 5200. In the protocol column, you want to select both. This gives you both UDP and TCP simultaneously. Then there will be an area for your IP address of the computer, and that is the one that has the Echolink program on it. Check enable, save the page, and you should be off and running. Now, considerations for those using DSL and commercial modems. If you're using a router, and most probably will be, access your modem and configure it to run in the bridge mode. I'm talking the modem now. A DSL or a commercial multi-IP configured modem. You want to place that in the bridge mode. Now, this should turn off its internal firewall setup and disable the internal DHCP network inside of the modem. By doing this, your firewall protection and IP addressing will be done by your router. Throw me a nickel here, Pete. Stand by one. Okay, a couple of tips to throw in your direction. After making any changes on your system, reboot all of the equipment. Turn off your computer, pull the DC cable from both the router and the modem. Wait at least 60 seconds, 1 minute, and bring your equipment back online in the following manner. First, turn on your modem and wait 1 minute for it to stabilize. Then turn on your router and wait 1 minute for it to stabilize. Then turn on your computer. Now run your firewall test again, and if it passes, smile. And if it doesn't, repeat all above. So in a short conclusion here, we want to say refer to your equipment instruction manuals as required or search for information on the Internet. You can also look over the information on routers and firewall issues at www.echolink.org. www.echolink.org. If all fails, send us an email, voip@southcars.com. Voice over Internet Protocol, voip@southcars.com. Now, that's all you get for the free issue, guys and gals. If you're interested in a more complete professional issue, why, please subscribe to www.voip.southcars.com, and I'm just kidding about that. VE2XPL, I'll have to pull up my time clock here. I'm running 4 minutes into the hour. How did I do, Pete? KY6V, the show is yours.
KY6V, thank you very much. Most interesting indeed, and you did great. Did great for time. Certainly leaves us a lot of time for questions and discussion. That's fine. You asked if I'm certainly buying a lot of nickels. That's fine. You're asking if they will be refunded. I spoke to Boris in accounting, and he came back to me, and this is what he said. But you never know. You never know. Keep your fingers crossed. With that, we'll open her right up for questions. Anybody who has questions about setting up your links and repeaters, or if you've already tried and you're looking for some advice or anything you might think of, come on aboard. This is Pete, VE2XPL in Montreal. This is the South Cars TNT Open Forum for October 22nd, Thursday, or October 25th, Friday, if you're on the other side of this big green earth of ours. So come on aboard to a South Cars TNT with your questions. All right? As usual, I will ask the first questions. Well, thanks again, Gordon. We appreciate you being here. Gordon is a great Echo Link and ham radio Elmer. I've got lots of experience playing with this stuff, and we appreciate your help. Always more than willing to help. I've heard Gordon help many a newcomer with various problems setting up. So let me start under links and repeaters. You were discussing RTS and DTR. I was wondering if you can go into a little bit more details for us, Gordon, if you're comfortable doing that for our viewers, our listeners, I guess. Over.
I'll give it a college try, Pete. Thank you. Good question. KY6B here. The RTS and DTR language is an RS-232 protocol, and it normally denotes the different pins that are on your 9-pin COM port that you find on your computer. There's a ground pin, and there's a voltage pin. There's a number of things that are available there. The EchoLink program is designed to toggle. Let's just stick with the RTS as an example because it's similar to the others. To toggle the RTS pin from a high to a low state, depending on what it wants, the peripheral that's plugged into that D9 COM port to do. So basically, the EchoLink program has the RTS ready to send pin sitting at a low, and it toggles it to a high for it to drive something that is downwind of the computer. Now that can be incidentally, you can change the polarity of that. You can select whether you want it to rest in low or rest in high, but it's normally resting in low and active on high. And as an example, if you take a transistor and you feed the output voltage coming out of the RTS pin when it's high to the base of the transistor will turn on if it's a PNP transistor and conduct. Now, with this said, your PT line, your push-to-talk line coming from your transistor normally rides at somewhere about 5 volts in the unkeyed transmitter condition and goes to zero voltage when the transmitter is transmitting. So you take this 5-volt line on your push-to-talk, you put it to the collector of the transistor, you ground the emitter of the transistor, and now you can see what's happening. The moment that the RTS comes high, it makes the transistor conduct, it takes the push-to-talk line to ground from the collector to the emitter, and your transmitter is squawking. Did I go too deep or not deep enough, Pete? KY6V, over.
Yeah, excellent explanation. Roger that. Too deep or not deep enough depends on the listener, I guess. Some of these gentlemen and ladies who are listening will most likely want to attempt building their own interface cable, which, as you've mentioned before, can be done for less than $10 and less than $2 if you have some stuff in your junk box parts. And I just thought it's good information for those of us who are perhaps intending to make our own cable, just to know these are good things to know when you're building your own stuff. So no, it wasn't too deep at all, and we appreciate the level of knowledge. I personally have chosen a interface box. I have a Rig Blaster. I had looked at the devices that you could make yourself for under a couple of bucks, and both had their pros and cons. I chose to go with the Rig Blaster because it permits me to leave the mic on my 2-meter radio when I want to just chat locally, and then I just flip a switch and then can use it as an interface when I set up my linking station and go away with my HT. So I was just wondering if you have a preference as to which method you use. Which method do you use, and is there pros and cons as far as you're concerned to either setup? Over.
Well, it's a very broad question, Pete, but a good one. KY6V here. I have been with Echolink since John Taylor first brought it out in the early 2000s, and I was with iLink prior to that. I've always used my own home-built interface cable with a 2N2222 transistor. Very simple to put together, and the original cable that I built in the early 2000s to put a link online is still functioning, and I have yet to have a failure of that one single transistor. I need to mention one thing to you for thinking now. Some radios and some radio microphones, if the microphone is left in, will pick up sounds that are going on in the shack. The microphone itself, in many cases, when you hit that push-to-talk button, is only keying the push-to-talk line. It is not toggling an on and off condition of the microphone cartridge. A lot of your older microphones did that. They not only switched PTT, but they also switched audio. But the new ones aren't doing that. So if you are running Echolink, you have, and your transmitter is keyed, your microphone is plugged into your transceiver, if you have anything going on, like sneezing or coughing or the dogs barking, that's going to come along with whatever Echolink audio you're trying to pump. Back to you, Pete, KY6V.
Very good, very good. Interesting indeed. All right, let's open her up for questions once again. Anyone from anywhere in the world, this is South Cars TNT Open Forum. Come on aboard with your questions about Echolink. The floor is yours, people. Come on aboard.
I think we must have put them, I must have put them all to sleep, Pete. You might comment on your experience with your link and how you like to walk around in the backyard and chase the skunks. As a little bit of a fill, over.
Yeah, roger that. I don't chase the skunks. The skunks usually end up chasing me back into the house or into the shed. I started out with Echolink like many people, just as a single user. Not long after that, it's fun playing in front of the computer, of course, but when you want to go play outside on those nice sunny days, it's nice to be able to walk away. So that's the reason I decided to set up a link. Plus, I like to tinker, so it's another one of those excuses to play radio, isn't it? So I had looked at the various options available to me, Echolink, IRLP, et cetera. The most logical and easiest to fund for me was an Echolink setup. I'd looked at the cables, but I only have one in the shack here. I only have one 2-meter, it's actually a 2-meter 70-centimeter radio that I have, and I also use it for running a weekly net at our local club here. So I chose to go Rig Blaster for the simple reason that it lets me marry the radio to the computer, and also the microphone is plugged into the little Rig Blaster unit so that I can flip a switch and just use the 2-meter radio as a 2-meter radio, and it completely bypasses the whole Echolink setup. I will pause for 3 seconds.
Yeah, quick comment, Pete.
Yeah, roger, go ahead.
KY6V here. The way that you are configured, you won't have the audio problem that I mentioned. I'm talking if you have your microphone plugged into a transceiver and you are using an accessory plug, let's say in the back of the transceiver, to feed what you need to the computer and back and forth, then that microphone will be hot and it will get you into trouble. But the fact that you are plugging your microphone into the rig blaster is smart enough to only let you do one or the other, isn't it? You either have to throw a switch or hold your nose different or something, and therefore the audio problem that I mentioned is not appropriate to the way that you're configured. Over.
Yes, that is correct. That's another reason that I decided to go that route, and thanks for reminding me and mentioning that. It does have the advantage of not having to unplug the interface cable every time you want to use your 2-meter radio as a 2-meter radio, but it also alleviates that problem. I could just leave that mic plugged in and ignore it. For example, right now, as many of you know, I have a very, very miniature sound studio set up here, so I'm running through a somewhat professional quality microphone plugged into a mixer, and then the mixer goes into the sound card. And if I wish to speak on 2-meter, I just pick up my mic and start speaking, and I have two different mics set up for that very reason. But the link itself gives me that freedom, as we were discussing originally, before I took off on my Rig Blaster promo tangent. Gives me the freedom of flipping a switch and taking off with my handheld and going out with the dogs, walking around the neighborhood with this transceiver spitting out about 5 watts in low power. I've radiate probably about a 7 or 8 mile radius so far, probably as far as 10 miles that I've tried. That's pretty low-lying lands here, so I don't have any. I'm not set up on top of a mountain. I'm sort of in a valley, so the radiation pattern is somewhat limited. But if I take off of my car, it gives me that freedom too. I've checked in on nets and talked to some nice folks from South Cars from my mobile and from my handheld, and that is the beauty of setting up a link or a repeater setup. So I recommend all of you guys to give it a shot. So that's my reason for getting into it. And like I said, it's a good way to play radio and tinker. Let's pause one more time, and we'll open it up for questions once again. Anyone who has a question, come on aboard. Don't be shy. VE2XPL in Montreal, this is South Cars TNT.
Yeah, the KJ6 ZD. Good evening, gentlemen. Just checking in. And as far as I'm concerned, tonight is the net that gets a little bit deeper into technical details there. I believe I read something in regards to routers and so on. Back to you, Pete. I think you got the net control tonight. And good evening, if my memory would be better. W6YV, I got this all wrong there. Back to you, Pete. KJ6ZD in Vista, California, and the name here is Norbert.
Roger that, Norbert. Welcome back. Checked in the net before. I recognize the call sign. Our guest tonight is Gordon once again, KY6V. Did you have a specific questions about our routers or firewalls? Back to you.
No, actually not. The system he is running. When did I start there? 2003 or something. So it's somewhat like 6 years up and running. Gave me some headaches in the beginning, and one of the things, the headache that I had in the beginning with routers was running a DHCP on it, dynamic IP, and this might run for a week or so, and if DHCP is going to renew the lease, you might wind up with a new on your local area. I'm not sure. I may have checked in too late. This might have been already covered there by I get it. Give me a few more turnarounds and I'll remember the name and the call sign. I have trouble with that. Anyways, back to you, Pete. So the system here is running just fine, and I think I've worked out over the years quite a few of those quirks in there.
KJ6ZD, VE2XPL here with Gordon, KY6V on the side. Well, do you mind? Your system is sounding really good. Would you mind describing a little bit how your system is set up? Are you going with a direct interface table that you've fabricated or bought, or are you running through manufactured EchoLink, a Rig Blaster type interface, if you wouldn't mind? Over.
Oh, no, I don't mind at all, Pete. Yeah, good evening, Gordon, and forgive me. Forgive me for this. I have such a hard time to retain new things, new call signs, new names and everything else, even if these names are old. Yeah, okay, Pete, back to the system. I started out similar as you did back in 2003, learned about Echolink, and started out with a, I think it was a VA3 TA or something, whatever his call sign was. This Canadian fellow, he had a fairly simple interface there, used that one. But the connection to connectors, these audio connectors, over time, they may oxidize a little bit on the surface. And then I had hum-induced and all kinds of other stuff. And I said, nah, it's not going to work like this. So I started off and actually designed and built my own interface. And also the stuff around became much, much more and bigger than it actually was intended to be in the beginning. So as I say, I started with my own interface, designed it, and this is one that is actually isolated on the audio side. I'm using audio coupling transformers with it and switch the PTT and core signals via an optocoupler. So, however, the circuitry also contains some circuitry which allows me to fine tweak the audio. In other words, give them a little boost either on the basses or on the treble, or cut them. And I have learned that most of the soundboards do not have on their microphone or line input the ability to actually adjust the frequency response to what you feed in. This is all flat going, and they sound tinny. That's what actually encouraged me to put in a circuitry that allows me to do that one. This is a longer one, so I'm going to give it back to you, Pete, and we'll see if there's maybe someone else that wants to join in, and I don't want to time it out, so please go ahead, Pete. KJ6ZD in Vista.
And one at Fitz, 6 Victor with a comment.
Yeah, roger that, Gordon. Well, it sounds like you know what you're doing, and it certainly sounds good, and certainly a lot of fun to tinker, isn't it? And most of us do. We learn as we go. The more we play with this stuff, the more we learn about it. I agree with you about a lot of the microphones sounding flat. It's one of the reasons that I've chosen to go. I run through a little mixer so I can increase my basses, or I can decrease them and sound as flat as I want. So I have that freedom because I'm running a soundboard, but you don't normally get that just through your normal volume control panels through the various versions of Windows. But Gordon, KY6V, come on aboard with your comments, sir.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to tip my hat to Nobert out there and the grand state that I evacuated many years ago. I guess I'm more of a Floridian now than I was a Californian or something. I'm not sure. But Nobert, that's a good comment on adjusting the frequency response, and you're absolutely correct that most sound cards as they come don't give you that capability. You can play with a level, you can't play with the frequencies. In Pete's case, he's running a mixer, but I call it a mixer equalizer, you rascal. It's, you know, because you can equalize as well as adjust gains. But, Nobert, I'm sure that you know this, but I'm mentioning it for others that may be listening. There are some excellent audio programs that can be downloaded for free, as I might add, free, as like in nothing, that work very well to introduce an equalizing circuit into your existing sound card. We run one of those on our local system, and I'm one that's very fussy, Nobert, with audio and the response, the dynamic response. You know as well as I do that you get some of these radios that have got their equalizing and emphasis, de-emphasized circuits. A lot of guys get into trouble because they're not cabling correctly, matching correctly, and the pre-emphasis and de-emphasis just sounds like the devil. You talk about an empty tin can. But at any rate, my comment, Norbert, and I'd like to hear your response to this, there are some programs that can be downloaded for your computer that will give you the equalizing characteristics. Go ahead, sir, from KY6V, over.
Yeah, fine business, Gordon. Yeah, I may have to go a little bit ahead with or continue on with the explanation or description of the system here. Yeah, there might be some software, and to be honest with you, I've never actually did any research on it, where you can actually change the frequency, the sound frequency input to the soundboard by software. Now, the reason I'm not doing this by software, rather do it by hardware, is I have pretty much a home-built transmitter or transceiver system using a repeater controller, a multi-port controller, that allows me to link a 70-centimeter repeater to it. Right now I'm on the 2-meter end. And that receiver actually is producing some discriminated audio. So what comes into that receiver sounds extremely tinny, what comes out of it, unless I'm going to process it a bit. I'm doing this because I'm getting otherwise into trouble when I link the 2-meter simplex with the repeater, because the repeater is a similar setup, and you can mess up a lot. You probably know that better than I do, a lot on the audio if you do too much processing and you just don't let it run as it comes off the originating transmitter. All of the mobile rigs have some pre-emphasis on it, so that actually would cause, if I don't de-emphasize it into the computer system, would cause even more of a tinny sound because of the nature of the receiver I'm using there. So that's why I haven't looked into a software, because my hardware in between would be not affected at all by what I'm doing. Plus, I'm not using Echolink, the Windows version of Echolink. I'm using something that comes out of Sweden. You've heard of it. It's the SVX Link, and I like it much better because it runs on the Linux box, and in my opinion, a lot more reliable and stable than Windows ever can be. Maybe the last version they released might be, but I'm not going to try it out. Give them another $400 or so. Pete, I'll throw it back to Gordon for his response there, and I hope that my response did actually answer what he was asking there. KJ6ZD, please go ahead.
Very good, Norbert. Thank you. Excellent comments. And that's something that is probably not understood as well as that it should be in common applications, and that's the pre-emphasis and de-emphasis curve that is used on FM communication. And boy, you're absolutely right. If you're coming right out of the discriminator with audio and prior to any of the de-emphasized circuits, you sure do sound like a can. I know that you've got your arms around that by the other things that you've mentioned, but that's great. Well, Pete, I'm going to throw it back to you. I've made a note here that somewhere before you close, it doesn't have to be now, I would like to discuss briefly curbing repeater IDs, local announcements, courtesy beeps, long squelch tails, and all of the things that repeaters can generate that drive our nets crazy. Back to you, Pete, from KY6V.
Well, excellent. A great discussion indeed between Gordon, KY6V, and Norbert, KJ6ZD. Norbert, you certainly know what you're talking about. Stick around. We may rely on your expertise. And if ever you're willing to come on board as a technical advisor, I will be happy to have you as well. So let's open it up for questions and see if anybody else has anything to say. VE2XPL in Montreal, this is South Cars TNT. Come on aboard with your questions about Echolink.
NW2P with a question and a statement.
N2MH.
Excellent. To IRLP stations, N2MH standby, and the NW station. I apologize. I didn't get the rest of your call. Come on aboard with your full call and your question and comment, sir.
Okay. It's November, a whiskey to Papa, NW2P. The comment on Norbert's problem with the router, I'm sure he's aware, but others might not be. You can dedicate a MAC address to a particular IP address, and that way DHCP will not reassign that port. And for the question, especially after Norbert mentioned the Linux version of Echolink, are there any relative advantages and disadvantages to running straight Echolink versus the Echo IRLP with an IRLP board?
Yeah, I guess that question was directed to me. This is one of those things that I have to put into a pool that I would call it depends. One of the things I have learned with Windows Echolink version is that you can use it as a computer-to-computer communication device. IRLP does not allow this. You always have to have some sort of an interface and have to go in somehow via an RF link. This is, in my opinion, actually the only major difference. A second thought is that IRLP does package the audio packets in a different way so that you can actually get almost an instant result on the other end on the distance station, as opposed to Windows, which is going to do a little bit more buffering on it, meaning it'll take a second or something of audio, stores it away, and then replays it 1 second later, actually through whatever is hooked up to it, a speaker, an RF link, or whatever it may be. I hope this did answer your question.
Indeed. Thank you. Shall give both considerations. I'll probably go with the Echo IRLP package.
Oh, thank you for the comment and the question. Yeah, I think the IRLP versus Echolink versus Echo IRLP. We had Tony talking about that a few weeks ago. VK3JED gave his IRLP presentation and briefly touched on Echo IRLP, and the Echo IRLP just gives you access to both. Of course, it's IRLP-based, Linux-based, which is more stable than most Windows packages. Although I'm told that Windows, is it Windows 7 coming after Vista? I'm told that's supposed to be stable, but we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, a question of preference. Echo IRLP will give you the option of doing the IRLP side via a radio, of course. You're needing your radio to contact other IRLP stations, but also lets you sit at your computer and chat on the Echolink side. So, you know, it's the whole tomato-tomato debate. I think it just depends on what you like to use. Gordon, would you like to comment? And stand by N2MH. Gordon, come on aboard.
No, I think everything's been covered very nicely, Pete. When Mark comes up here in a moment, he may want to comment on the mentioning by Norbert that the audio is handled differently. The whole compression scheme is different with the IRLP systems than it is for the compression system that is used for Echolink. And frankly, being a very highly supported Echolink supporter, I have always liked the IRLP audio sound better. It's more rounded, it's more clean, it's more broadcast quality. At any rate, let's see what kind of trouble we're going to get into when you turn it over to Mark. KY6V, go ahead, P.
Yeah, very good. Indeed. Come on aboard, Mark. Let's hear what you have to say. V2XPL Montreal, South Cars TNT Open Forum. Welcome.
Hey, good evening, Pete. Good evening, Gordon, and the rest of the net. This is N2MH, the rabble-rouser from northern New Jersey. I actually have two comments. The first one, Gordon, has to do with the receive audio coming out of the typical link radio. When you plug, when you make a plug into the speaker jack, you generally disconnect the speaker, so you may be upsetting the terminating impedance that the audio output amplifier wants to see. So it may be a good idea to put a resistor in there on the order of 10 ohms to simulate the speaker load. This may protect the amplifier from overvoltage or something, some conditions it doesn't like. It also may tend to smooth out the frequency response if there's negative feedback involved in that stage. Over to you for that, for a comment on that, and then I'll go into my second comment.
No, that's an excellent point. Some of the guys, Mark, as you all are aware, I'm sure, bridge their output so that they've got local audio also, and they'll come out of the speaker jack on the sound card with a Y. One goes over to the radio, the other one goes to the speakers, and so the issue is compounded even worse, or more, or however you want to put it. I have, to be very honest with you, been running systems since the start of EchoLink by coming directly out of the sound card jack into whatever radio is being used without any load considerations being made. And I've had great success with this, Mark. But I cheat a little bit, too, in the respect that I normally run an inboard equalizer. And if I don't like the sound of something, I nip its wings and put something in its place. Go ahead, Mark, KY6B.
Okay, Gordon. Well, the equalizer is always a welcome addition to the audio chain. Coming out of the sound card, it would make a difference whether you're using a speaker output or a line output. If I had my druthers and the sound card supported it, I'd rather use a line output for my audio into the radio. However, I was speaking more from the perspective of the radio audio into the sound card. But the point could be made either way. If we're using a power amplifier, it generally wants to be kept happy with a load termination. Go ahead.
Yeah. Do you run a sound card with a line output? That's neat if you got one. Most of these sound cards will give you a line in, but they don't give you a line out. It's speaker out and live with it, Mark. Over.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I got some old computers here, and old computers have old sound cards. In fact, when I first got started with the IRLP, the only sound card that was supported was the original Sound Blaster card, the real early ones, especially the EISA variety, and those always had a line level output in addition to the speaker output. In fact, I still got one of them kicking around here somewhere that's wrapped up in almost new condition, so I keep it on hand for just that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay, very good. Oh, I'd love to work with something like that. That'd make life a lot easier and a lot cleaner. All right, sir, what was your second question or comment? Over.
Okay, well, if you were really interested in good quality audio, go ahead and get yourself a semi-pro M-Audio card. I've got one in my other machine here, and it only has line-level outputs on it and inputs, in addition to, I think it's SPDIF and some other stuff like that. That'll really give you some real clean audio. The other comment was the packaging of the audio between IRLP, and EchoLink. I have to qualify this by saying on a point-to-point connection, in other words, from one station to another, IRLP uses it, what is called an ADPCM codec rather than EchoLink, which uses a GSM codec. It is true IRLP can use a variety of codecs, and the one used is actually negotiated at the time the connection is set up. But the default is an ADPCM codec, which is one step down from 64 kilobit toll quality audio, so-called toll quality audio that was on the long-distance network. And that may be why it sounds so much better than GSM. GSM is actually used in cell phones and was really done to conserve bandwidth, not to provide excellent quality audio. Go ahead.
I'm glad that you amplified that, particularly for Pete and the rest of the guys that are listening, that you can really get a better sound out of an IRLP processed audio system, and he's given you the reasons why. They're working with a lot of different things. Before I turn it back to Pete here, I need to ask Mark. I'm sorry to be nosy, but was that your stall warning indicator, or was it saying that you were going to time out? Over.
It actually did time out, so I had to drop it and pick it up real fast.
You can improve on the audio response of that that zinger, I think. I had to throw that in, Mark. Excuse me. Go ahead, Pete. Back to net, KY6V.
Well, Gordon, that is stock Motorola audio, and that's what this mobile has in it. So I'm stuck with it. Over to you, Pete, N2MH.
N2MH and VE2 and KY6V, sorry, VE2XPL here. No, great comments indeed. There's a whole lot you can do to improve your audio. Of course, I don't want to scare the potential newbies out there who are looking to try it. You certainly don't need that to get started. Stock audio is how I got started. And, yeah, most sound cards only have a speaker out and don't have that that coveted line out that certainly helps with things. And IRLP does have a bit smoother, rounder sound, but you can make do with most things. And if you really sound horrible, don't worry. The guy you're talking to will let you know, and that'll be an indicator that you have to upgrade. And it's certainly a lot of fun to play with. So we really appreciate the comments. And it can be somewhat complicated. I mean, audio is certainly a lot easier than video. I'll tell you that from experience. And audio can be a lot of fun, but it can certainly make you pull a lot of your hairs out of your head. Just in the audio setups, when you're first setting up your link system or your repeater system, you have audio setup options. You got the levels on your radio to set up. The radio, if you're running a Rig Blaster type setup, there's audio level controls on that. You have the audio level controls on your volume, on your control panels for your volume in Windows or other OSs that you might be running. So it can get a little bit tricky. So trial and error, certainly good on the Echo test system. Echo Link Node 9999 is of great use, of course. So with that, I will. I'm not sure if you had anything to add to that, Gordon. KY6V.
No, not at the moment. See who else may be interested in asking some questions or making some comments, Pete. I don't know if you made a note or not, but I do want to talk about IDs when it fits. KY6V, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, we can do that right now. Here's a stall indicator for you. If we're going down, I'll let you know. Anyhow, yeah, why don't we discuss that now, because we are at 38 minutes past 9 p.m. here on the East Coast, so we're running into our 69th minute. So why don't we discuss that now, and we'll open her up for questions after. Come on aboard, Gordon.
Okay, I'm not sure I like your horn either. KY6 for here. It reminds me of the old Ooga horns. You know, the thing with a rubber bubble on the back of a horn-shaped gizmo that you hung it on the side of your car That was your horn. You reached out and squeezed the bubble and went, ooh. Anyway, I'd like to touch on just a moment. This is Gordon, KY6V, on those who are listening that will be either eventually hooking a repeater up to your EchoLink system or are currently using a repeater. Most of the conference servers that you connect into, and SCARS being one of them, frowns on hearing local IDs. This doesn't happen on the IRLP system, guys. It only happens on EchoLink, because they do things differently. When we're running a net, as an example, just talk about this open forum this evening. If we had 10 or 15 repeaters that were linked in and talking, listening to the open forum, and you hadn't taken measures of blocking your ID would be going off, somebody else's ID would be going off. Pretty soon you'd have 15 of them going off and on, off and on, off and on, and just raising havoc with what's trying to be conducted on the server. So what we are trying to suggest here, and suggest very strongly, I might add, we want a means to be put into place where that ID is kept locally and is not retransmitted over your EchoLink feed. This also includes courtesy beeps, Roger beeps, as some people call it, extended squelch tails, so on and so forth. Let me buy a nickel here, and I'll just a couple more comments, Pete. Now, there are two ways to look at accomplishing this. If your EchoLink computer and system is at the repeater site, there are several things that you can do depending on the controller that you're using and how you couple into the controller. If it is in the controller, the audio feed is prior to any controller-generated ID, you've got it licked right there. If not, you can take another step, and this is applicable also to those link systems that are tuned into the local repeater system and rebroadcasting the local repeater and have absolutely no control in getting in there and turning that ID off so that their system doesn't retransmit it. That requires some cooperation with the repeater people, and what you do is that you put your transceiver at your home link location into Tone Squelch, and you use the Tone Squelch that's being transmitted out of the repeater. Now, the repeater owner and trustees and technicians need to go in and make a couple of minor changes. They pick up the encoder triggering line from the actual controller, and they move it over to the COR line, or the receiver transmit line, so that the PL is only generated at the times that the receiver is active. And all other times the PL is not generated, therefore when the ID goes out, it goes out locally and doesn't go worldwide. Please take a look at this, guys and gals. It's an easy thing to work out once you understand the principle, but we need to keep it off of the server. It's just too difficult, and it's too much of an interruption during net proceedings or any other proceedings to allow to happen. VE2XBL, thank you for letting me get on my tall stand here. KY6V, go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, Roger that, Gordon. Thank you. We can't mention that enough, indeed. Especially with the amount of traffic that we get and the amount of various stations that are connected to us, and a lot of them are Dash R systems. So apologies for that. A lot of them are Dash R systems. So if everybody starts beeping and booping, it won't end. And all we'll be doing is practicing RCW, and maybe there's something to be said for that too. Hi. With that, thanks, Gordon. We'll open it up for questions again. Let's see who's out there. We're looking at 44 minutes past the hour of 9 p.m. on the east coast of North America. Come on aboard. South Cars TNT. My name is Pete, VE2XPL. Anyone with questions, it's your time to shine.
Okay. Doesn't seem like someone wants to shine. KJ6ZD again. Gordon, I think this is a very interesting and also very important suggestion, or actually I would say it should become sort of a rule. There is another thing, if I may just comment on this, Pete. Do I have it?
Well, absolutely. This is the open forum. This belongs to you guys, so we welcome your comments. Carry on, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Pete. Yeah, my Simplex just ID'd here. So I had to wait until it went back released, but PTT, since the thing doesn't let me talk while it is talking. Yeah, Gordon, I think it's very important to do there. There's another aspect that I might want to throw in. If your system, your link is going to retransmit an ID across the Internet, imagine you're connected to another country. There might be a repeater system. And this repeater system IDs locally. Now your ID goes in and is being retransmitted through this repeater system. It might be confusing, and I'm not even sure if it is in some countries legal to transmit an ID that doesn't belong into this country. So there may be some legal issues arising in some of the countries. I can't tell which. I'm sure there could be something to the local link or repeater operator that they get at least a warning and say, you got to cut this out because this signal did not really, doesn't have to ID in this country because it is not in that country. It's the same thing as if I'm linked into Germany and I say, here, this is KJ6ZD, I have to locally ID, but it should not be actually coming as a system ID out on the other side there. So I hope I did this back to Pete. Yeah, please go ahead.
Comment when it fits, Pete.
Yeah, Roger that. Norbert's flying low there. You're losing altitude. You got to watch that. And thanks for the comment. That's absolutely true. I presently and I violate U.S. Laws, FCC laws regularly. As you guys know, I don't ID often enough. We do XBL here in my country. We only need to ID every 30 minutes, and in the United States, it's every 60 minutes. And presently, we have three linking stations in other countries other than Canada and the U.S. Connected to us right now. So, yeah, we have to make sure that we respect their rules and regulations and just etiquette considerations as well across borders and across cultures. Come on aboard with your comment, Gordon. KY6V, this is V2XPL and South Cars TNT.
Thank you, Pete. KY6V here. I just wanted to say thank you to Norbert out there. Your multi tones that just came across at the end of your transmission were the cleanest I've heard here tonight. I mean, when we compare Pete's Ooga horn up there in Montreal and poor Mark's timeout buzzer on his Motorola, I mean, you've got the ribbons tonight, Norbert. I want to add that, you know, it's all of these points lead up to one simple point, and that is, or all of these comments lead up to one simple point, and that is refrain from broadcasting your ID, local announcements, courtesy beeps, long squelch tails, and all of that. It just makes a mess for a whole bunch of reasons. But I want to add to that is the text box is a culprit also. There are so many versions of things going on these days. You know, there's the wind system, and there's the this system and that system. There's DIR, RPT, DIR, and it goes on and on. And a lot of these systems automatically dump text information in copious amounts. I mean, it just keeps going and going. Every time somebody sneezes, this thing will come up in the text box and says, KY6V just sneezed, or he just connected, or he just disconnected. We don't need that information. The text box is for users to talk back and forth. So please refrain from that, just like the IDs. And in doing so, it's fairly simple. All of the programs, at least that I know of, have a disabling feature for dumping that amount of traffic into text form. So, boy, am I going to be hated tomorrow morning with all of this, huh, Pete? It's your fault. VE2XPL from KY6V. Over.
Oh, yeah, sure. Blame the Canadian. It's easy. I'm hiding up here across the border. I'm safe. The FCC can't get me. Thanks, Gordon. Good precision on that. Indeed, text box comments. We forget every once in a while. And I see them popping up once in a while, too, and it's funny sometimes. Sometimes they're so long that you have to scroll back up to see what the message was. So, yes, another important little aspect. Echolink is one of those programs that just keeps on giving if you're a techie or if you like to play around. I think we could just have a whole other shows on the various menu options, you know, the sysop settings, the preference, the setups, all the different views that you can have, the logs, and we'll have to explore those in depth in a future show. So let's see if anybody else has any questions. My name's Pete, Victor Echo 2 X-ray Papa Lima in beautiful Montreal, Canada. This is Southcar's Thursday night thematic open forum, or the Friday morning thematic open forum if you're on the other side of the world from me. Let's see, does anybody have any questions for Gordon, for myself, or for anybody on the net but Echolink and the sysop settings? Come on aboard now. Well, I guess we've been thorough tonight. Yes, we've been thorough indeed. With that, we're looking at 52 minutes past the hour of 9 p.m. here on the East Coast. And let's see if Gordon can come back with final comments, and we'll wrap it up since we're approaching the 90-minute mark. For the sake of all you podcast listeners, we welcome all the podcast listeners as well, and we hope that you're enjoying the show. So, Gordon, come on aboard with final comments, and we'll wrap it up. Thank you for being here once again. This is V2XPL in Montreal.
Well, thank you for having me, Pete. Very much appreciated, sir. KY6V here. I think you just about summed it up when you said we probably need more presentations on this subject. It's very difficult to cover everything or all of the aspects in one presentation. It can be done, but it would go on for hours. And then our leading manager up there in the form of Pete, you know, tries to say, well, look, we need equal time here. Try to keep your presentation to 30 minutes, and then we'll open up the rest of the session for questions and answers. And you take a subject like Echolink and links and repeaters and routers and firewalls and then all of the options that are available to you, there's no ending to this. So I want to second your thought, Pete, that you know, sometime in the future, I think there should be some additional things to pick up. We can all pick them up right now and say what they are, but you know, to discuss them would take forever. Thank you very much for having me, sir. VE2XPL from KY6V. Over.
Yeah, roger that. Well, I've been brainstorming a little bit. This is such a popular subject, and like I said, daily or just about daily on this and other servers, I hear people talking about Echolink and how to set this up and why does this do that and why is this happening and why is it not happening. So I think we can certainly all benefit. And maybe we'll just have a regular feature once a month or every week. you know, maybe a 10 or 15 minute spot every week, or a little bit longer once a month, where we discuss certain aspects of Echolink and the linking systems and then dash L dash R systems, and we can certainly keep learning from each other, and I think that's a good thing. So I'll take one more last call for questions before we close down the official portion of the show. This is V2XPL. My name's Pete. I'm your host for the South Cars Thursday Night Thematic Open Forum, and we're calling last call for questions with our guest, Gordon, KY6V. All right, sounds good. Proverbial cow has come home, and we'll shut her down for one more week. I'd like to thank everybody who was there tonight. I seen, that's pretty good English. Kathy's going to be proud of me. I have seen 28 stations connected tonight from five different countries. We had three Japanese stations connected tonight. Welcome to our listeners from Japan. Our station, our regular Ravi from Trinidad, station from Russia. Welcome Russia as well. I think that's a first for South Cars TNT. Canada and the U.S., of course, are always well represented. And I'd like to thank everybody for being here. Without you guys, it'd just be me talking to myself, which I can handle, of course, but it's a lot more interesting when you guys are there to listen. And it makes for great, great discussions. So we've been covering Echolink 201, more on Echolink, and more to follow in the future. Let me pause for 3 seconds. Again, I invite your attention to our podcast available at www.voip.southcars.com. Look for the South Cars VOIP podcast link on the left of the page. If you missed any or all of the show, if you want to hear it again, if you want to hear the sound of my sultry voice, just go over there and you can listen to me all day long. Actually, I invite you to go and listen to our guest presenters because they're a lot more interesting than I am. So a few more announcements. We still need your input. My laptop just started freaking out. Luckily, I'm not running Echolink on that one. That was weird. We need your input. Send us your suggestions for topics of discussion on this open forum. Any and all topics of interest will be discussed. Also, if you have a skill or topic that you want to share with us, we invite you to be a host or an invited guest on South Cars TNT Open Forum. Contact us at voip@southcars.com. Also, we're looking for co-producers if you want to run your own show. Even if you want to just try it once, try your hand at planning a show, airing a show. We invite you. This is a one-of-a-kind net, and it's a lot of fun to produce. So I invite co-producers on the show. And all details for this and other of great VOIP nets can be found on our website, www.voip.southcars.com. With that, I thank Gordon. Many, many thanks for being there once again, sharing your knowledge and expertise with us of Echolink. There's no better source on this server than Gordon. A lot of us know what we're talking about, but it seems that Gordon is always there to help, to lend a helping hand. And if you have any questions that you'd like to submit, please do so. Again, at the same address, voip@southcars.com. I'll break for one last time. And with that, I'll say 73s to all. Thanks again to the 28 stations that were connected and the six stations that chimed in with comments and questions. We thank you, thank you, thank you. Like I said, without you guys, there's no show. So at 21:58, I close South Cars TNT for one more week, and we'll catch you guys next week. Next week, I'll be doing a review of various websites, videos, books, and other things that I find interesting. So hopefully you guys will find that interesting as well. And you're welcome next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. So good night, everybody. 73s. Thanks again, Gordon, KY6V. This is VE2XPL. We'll be returning the SCAR server to its regular amateur use. And we'll talk to you guys soon. VE2XPL will be on frequency.